it's Canzano. Thanks for making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe and leave us some feedback. Also, the podcast is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic, dedicated to providing breakthrough, non-invasive, drug-free solutions to ED problems. Call Multnomah Medical Clinic at 503-899-4199 or visit them online at multnomahmedical.com.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast,
a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
BFFT. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with The Bald-Faced Truth.
We've all seen people on television set world records. Our next guest has 11 world records, continues to push for greater challenges. He has walked on a high wire across the Grand Canyon, across Niagara Falls, part of the great Walenda legacy. Nick Walenda joining us. He's written a book. It's called Facing Your Fears, and he's with us. Nick, where are you today?
I'm in Sarasota, Florida.
Give us an idea, like, how young are you when you're on a high wire in this family?
My mom was 6 months pregnant with me and still walking the wire. So, a long time. I started walking the wire about 18 months old.
That's crazy. I mean, it's just, for the rest of us, it's crazy, but it's a family legacy. Who's the first Walenda who ever got on a wire?
Well, our family history dates back to the 1780s in Bohemia, believe it or not, is when our family started performing on wires and in circuses, and didn't come to the United States. Came over from Germany, though, in 1928.
You look at what you do, and, you know, the margins for error come with tremendous consequences. And in fact, your book that you've written, chapter one, starts with the fall. One bad experience, that's all it takes. Those are the first two sentences of the book. Let's talk about that moment, a terrible experience that, you know, you got to wrap your head around.
Yeah.
Why was it important for you to write the book, and why start there?
Yeah, so in 2017, we were attempting to break our own world record by performing the highest four-level, eight-person pyramid on the wire. We trained for about 6 weeks and decided that it was time to bring it up high about 2 days prior to premiering it to Guinness and a live audience. And it was that day that my worst nightmare became a reality. As we were making our way out on that wire, that pyramid collapsed. And by the grace of God, I caught the wire, so did my cousin, and one of the guys stayed standing, but five of my family members and friends fell to the ground. My sister injured severely, my aunt injured severely. In fact, my sister broke every bone in her face. She currently has 73 screws and plates in her face alone, but was immediately put into a coma, and we didn't know if she was going to survive. And I did what I thought was right, which is get back on the horse. We all know that analogy. And I got back on the wire for the following day and performed for the next 4 weeks. And then I took some time off. And what happened was, during that time off, I started just reliving that accident over and over again. And to the point where it became debilitating, to the point where I would literally get on the wire and start trembling. Even though I'd caught the wire, it still affected me mentally. Of course, physically I was fine, but mentally I was torn up. And the book was so important for me to write because I believe there's so many people right now that are gripped by fear. And in the book, I talk about the process and the steps that I had to go through in order to get through that, to the other side of that fear, and conquer my fears by then getting on a wire with my sister, who should have died, over Times Square, and then walking over an active volcano. And, you know, the book was really written practically to just about anyone, and it gives practical steps of what I went through, so that hopefully others that maybe are going through it might help them along a bit. You know, it was the greatest challenge of my career. I'd changed two laws in two countries to walk over Niagara Falls, and then walked over Niagara Falls and the Grand Canyon, 1,500 feet up, no safety with 43-mile-an-hour winds. That was nothing compared to this challenge of dealing with this fear. And I wanted to write a book in hopes, as I was going through this, I believe that every negative situation can be used to bring positive. And when I'm in those valleys, I try to always focus to the mountaintop. And part of that was starting to journal what I was going through and what I was dealing with, again, in hopes that others won't have to go maybe quite as far down into that valley.
Our guest is Nick Walenda. The book is called Facing Fear. Nick, you know, we all fall, right? Like, you know, no matter what we do, we will all fall. There is nobody here who's going to go through life with a clean ride.
That's right.
How hard is that, though, when you are a high-wire performer? Because you're up there, you don't want anything in your head. I imagine you're probably not thinking a whole lot when you're up there. You're more reacting, and you're in that moment.
Yeah, you know, it's very, very similar to any athlete. Is you kind of get into a zone, basically, and you put yourself back in the training camp or back in the, you know, on the field in training. And that's the same with me. I don't want those thoughts in my mind. I want to be able to just completely focus on what I'm doing. And it is almost like a trance-like experience often when I'm on that wire. In fact, it often becomes peaceful as the world just slows down and all the problems of the world go away. So, you know, it is very much a mind game. And really, you know, dealing with fear is very much a mind game. It is what I've learned is that we truly can control our thoughts. Our thoughts want to often bring us down to this negative point. And if we can learn to stop those, encounter them. And, you know, I give the example of walking across the Grand Canyon when I got hit with 43 mile an hour winds and Jim Cantore in my ear and he says, "Hey, that's 43 mile an hour gust." My mind wants to go crazy and say, "I'm 1500 feet up. I need to get down and hold onto this wire." But I can also go, "No, I'm not going to think that way because I trained with 90 mile an hour winds for this, double what I'm facing right now. I'll be more than fine."
When you're on a wire or you're above a volcano or you're above Niagara Falls or the Grand Canyon, the rest of us are looking at the risk. But when you're training for something like that, what goes into training for, you know, an achievement like that?
Yeah, it's extremely extensive. So for the volcano, my latest TV special on ABC, I actually had to train with an oxygen deprivation mask, knowing I would have to wear a gas mask that could impede my oxygen up to 30%. I wore an oxygen deprivation mask in training that dropped it down 70%. I wore 40 pounds weights on my front and my back, so 80 pounds of extra weight. I walked on a cable. We do laps on the cable, so the cable 750 feet long, but I would walk on it 10 times back and forth, so a mile and a half without stopping. I walked it forward and backwards. I walked with heat suits. I walked with goggles that were completely fogged up on a wire that is less stable, and all that is helping me prepare for that walk. If I can do it in a heat suit that brings higher heats than what I'll be facing, if I can do it with only 30% oxygen, if I can do it backwards, if I can do it five times the length, then certainly I can do it once over that active volcano.
Nick Walenda is our guest, author. The book is called Facing Fear. When you talk about fear, you talk about a stress response, or you talked about being on the wire and, you know, somebody getting in your ear and saying, "Look, it's 40 mile an hour winds." How does understanding your stress response help you when you're in a position like that?
Yeah, look, it's very, very important. I think it's important in every aspect of life that we can control again those stress levels. Again, it's all the decisions of the direction we'll allow ourselves to go, and we can go down that negative rabbit hole, or we can stay focused on the task at hand. What I learned was when I got gripped by this fear, it stopped me in my tracks. I was done performing. And what I learned is, A, I forgot what I'd been taught my entire life on the mental side of things and the preparation and leading up and everything that I've done. And then I really needed to focus on the fact that I'd done this pyramid literally thousands of times successfully, more than anyone in the world. And I continued to, during that time, focus on that one negative time. So the other thing I learned is I needed to keep moving. I needed to walk through that fear. So many people are gripped by fear. I wrote this book to the person who goes to work every Monday miserable, but they know on Friday they got a paycheck and they're continuing to do it. And I wrote this book to them because I believe there's so many people that are settling for status quo, and they're settling into a job that they're not happy about. And it's not their dream job, but they're settling because their mortgage is paid at the end of the month. And hopefully by reading this book, they'll be encouraged to step out in faith, to actually pursue those dreams. I'm not saying quit your job. Don't be foolish. Use wisdom, but start, you know, reigniting that fire of pursuing those dreams and pursuing the job that you want to be in. We don't have to settle for status quo in life because fear holds us back.
How important is it to say it out loud? Like that thing, that obstacle, that fear, you know, whether it's someone's job or whether it's a relationship or whether it's a high wire thing, how important is it to say it out loud?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of confessing it. It's part of making it known and making it known that, you know, I talk about shame in the book because I dealt with shame. Here I am, Nick Willenda. I should be fearless, but I have fear. And I had to deal with the shame, too. So I think talking about it, I think writing it down, I think dealing with it. Look, that's why people go. And I've gone to psychiatrists, psychologists to speak with them because there's something powerful about, you know, getting it off your chest.
There is, you know, a generation of kids that are growing up today that won't grow up going to the circus or going to, you know, a place that they can go watch people perform. What has happened with sort of the performance art and what you guys have done over years? And I know some of the stuff you do at fairs or you do as an ABC special, but what's happened to the circus industry?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly changed. I mean, I think the media has a big play in that. Look, the media has portrayed circus as being cheesy and generic and chaotic like DC. And the reality is circus is probably the most organized industry in the world. In fact, back in the day, a town of 600 people would move into your city and set up an entire city overnight. You'd wake up in the morning, you could go see this amazing show at this, at the time, state-of-the-art theater, if you will, you know, hundreds of years ago. So, look, I think that society has changed. I think that, again, you watch SpongeBob, I did with my kids growing up, and they portray circus as, you know, a goofy clown honking his nose on a unicycle. That's not what circus is. Circus is amazing athletic ability and skill. And the reality is, we know that the ratings are great on America's Got Talent, we know that people are fast, and 90% of that is either singers or circus performers. So the reality is, people are fascinated. I've broken television rating records walking a wire, which is a circus act. People are still fascinated with it. We just have to re-educate them on what it actually is. And what I've learned throughout my career is that once people get to that show, that circus under the big top, it's an experience like no other. And even the younger generations that thought that it was cheesy, that thought it was generic, go, you know what? I had no idea what this was, but I will continue to come back. And again, look, there's a few bad apples that do put on shows that are not of quality, and that can ruin it for others. But it is my passion to reignite the circus and bring it back to what it was back in the day. And I think that everything comes full circle, and I think we are facing a time now where you look at some of the most modern pop culture ads out there. They include, including Victoria's Secret and many, many others, all circus-themed. The reality is circus is becoming cool again.
It was amazing. I was in Hawaii one time, and I went to a Cirque du Soleil-like show that was going on in Hawaii, and there were Willendas that were performing. At least that's how it was billed. Maybe it was extended family. Maybe it was you. I don't know.
Cousins of mine, yeah.
Yeah, and it. If you're born into the Willenda family, was there anyone who just said, this isn't for me, or does everybody get on the line?
Yeah, I mean, there's several. There's 16 of us that currently perform, but there are many family members that don't carry it on. In fact, I have three children who are, two of them are adults now, but I've got a 22-year-old who I couldn't be more proud of serving our country as a U.S. Marine. I've got a 19-year-old soldier in the Army and a 17-year-old daughter who's going off to become a nurse. So my children, who are all amazing on the wire, have chosen to go a different direction, and I support them and I want them to be happy just like any parent would want their children to.
I love that you've written this book. I think it's relatable. I think especially at this time where there's a lot of fear in the media, there's a lot of fear on social media, you know, and here's, you know, the cover of the book, you're up on the wire, you're above a volcano. I mean, it's just like, if Nick Willenda can do this, what in your life that is holding you back can you overcome? What kind of feedback have you gotten from people who are reading the book?
Really good feedback. I mean, people are very, very encouraged by it. And it, you know, look, the goal was to help other people. That is, my goal is to inspire people that nothing's impossible. And the reality was, I got to a point where I thought that fear was going to change my view on life, and that it was going to be impossible to overcome. You know, my hopes are that as people read this, that they are encouraged, they are inspired, and again, that they will step out of their comfort zones. That's what I do every time I get on that wire. We are all on a wire. We're all trying to get to the other side.
It's interesting because I would think that if you could get up and walk across the Grand Canyon or Niagara Falls or Times Square between two buildings, that there's nothing Nick Willenda's afraid of. Like, do you have a fear that exists outside of the wire?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I talk about the vulnerability of the fears that I face off the wire for sure. I mean, look, one of my biggest fears is the attempt to reinvent the circus, if you will, and doing that. The last chapter talks quite a bit about that, of how I'm ready to do it. I'm ready to step out of that comfort zone and do it. I talk about the fear of financial failure, the fact that my great-grandfather wrote a book in the 70s, and he said in the circus, one day you eat the chicken, and really all live entertainment, one day you eat the chicken, and the next day you eat the feathers. Fear of financial failure, et cetera. And that's all stuff that I've dealt with off the wire until, again, 2017, when I had to deal with it on the wire.
I think people who are creative, and you certainly are in what you do, I think, you know, a movie like The Greatest Showman or, you know, the circus coming to town is an exciting thing. It, for the rest of us, we see Cirque du Soleil or we see other things. Is that something we should be supporting, or is there a void out there that could be filled by somebody like yourself reinventing what the modern circus should be?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think everything comes in waves and everything comes full circle. And I think that Cirque du Soleil has had an amazing round and they've done an incredible job at what they've done. But I think there's a new wave. There's a new round coming that everybody will have the opportunity to see and hopefully everybody will see over the next couple years here.
All right, Nick, I appreciate what you do. You stay safe out there. And by the way, right before you get on the wire, what's the thing you don't want someone to say to you?
Oh, goodness, that's an interesting question.
You know what I mean? Like, know, somebody about to get on stage, they say break a leg or, you know.
I don't really have, I'm not superstitious or anything. So really, I mean, I'll be having a conversation like we are right now and then get on the wire and walk over a volcano. It's just who I am.
That's amazing. Keep doing what you do. I appreciate it. I encourage people to pick up Facing Fear. You can find it in a number of places, Amazon included. And Nick, thank you for making time for us and sharing some of your family story.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you having me on.
All right. There's Nick Walenda, who's walking over a active volcano on the cover of the book. Jude and Newby, Alabama, Adriana. I can't quite go to commercial break yet. I want you to, like, what did you just hear?
Oh, I love how he's like, yeah, I'll just be having a conversation just like this, and then I'll go walk over a volcano. No big deal. I'm like, man, what am I afraid of? Look at this guy.
I just think it's relatable, too, because I think so many people are affected by fear, and not positively. Like, there's a good fight or flight response. It's healthy. It's kept people alive. But I think people are paralyzed by fear. I think the fear of failure, I think the fear of success in some people, that I think that's a real thing. I think that there are people that are just absolutely suffocating in their fear. And I think people listening to the show probably relate to that and go, oh, it's great that he's on the high wire, but how can that help me in my regular life? But I just think there's some takeaways there. And, you know, he talks in the book about saying it out loud. It's something I talk about all the time. Like, I think whether it's your dream or your fear, I think you got to say its name. You know, you got to speak it. You got to speak it into reality before you can overcome it or achieve it. And I'm a big believer of that. Alabama, Adriana, what did you hear from Nick Walenda there?
Well, I loved what he said about his grandfather saying about the chicken and the feathers. I had never heard anything like that before. And I think that that's a fear that's really relatable. And then also makes me want to just like run off and join the circus. So there's that too.
I hope he chases it. I hope he tries to reinvent it, because when I think of circus now, I remember as a kid, going to the circus. They had elephants that were probably mistreated, whatever. And, you know, that, thankfully, that kind of circus, I think, has gone the way of extinction. But I think he's talking more about performance art. And he's talking about, like, kind of what they do in Cirque du Soleil. Although, I kind of feel like if you've seen one of the Cirque du Soleils, you've seen them all. I've been to enough of them where I'm like, okay, show me something new. I would love to see somebody like Nick Walenda or his family sort of go, look, we're going to reinvent kind of the America's Got Talent of circuses, and we're going to barnstorm, and this is what we're going to do. Because I think it's cool to see him walk across the Grand Canyon or a volcano, but I just think there's something to be said, maybe post-pandemic, about people getting back together and families going to events and making memories. And I appreciate what he does. But I can't. If I was born into that family, I'd be like, nah, not for me. Not going to be on the high wire myself. Pretty interesting. And the act that we saw, we were in Hawaii, and they were like, you should go see this show. And we went to see this show. This was years ago. And it was the Walenda family. And I'm not kidding you. There was a woman who got up on the wire, had to be like 60 or 70 years old, and it was windy. And I'm looking up at her like, there's no net. There's nothing underneath her. Like, this was not like a safe thing. Like, I could see OSHA coming in and being like, nah, that's not going to be a safe place for a 60 or 70 year old woman to be standing. And she's up on that wire, and the wind was blowing, and the wire was moving, and I was looking like, I was just thankful that she got down off the wire at the end of it. Good stuff from Nick Walenda. Leave it here. You got the BFT statewide. Coming up next, Oregon Athletic Director Rob Mullins will be joining us. So you'll want to get here and stay here. You are interested in Pac-12 football and interested on what's going to happen and how this off season is turning into a real season. Rob Mullins will be with us to talk about that and much more on this radio program in a couple of minutes. Later in the show, Anna will join us, the 2 at 2, the Culligan Water Cooler Report. We've got a lot of stuff and a lot of ground to cover on the football programs, and coaches are tweeting out photographs of their stadiums. I love that this morning because everybody has kind of gone from, we need more time, to look at our stadium. It's on. Game on. Rob Mullins will be talking to us about that and being the athletic director at Oregon and much more. That's still ahead. I want to probably take a quick break here so I can go longer with Rob Mullins. That would be my preference. I want to ask him about the schedule. I want to ask him about, you know, the potential for fans to be inside the stadiums maybe later in the year. I think there's a lot of whispers about that stuff going on. I want to ask him about the rivalry games in the conference. Will they be, in fact, pushed towards the end of the season? And what happens with competitive equity in the conference? Like, how do you pick the best team in this conference if, you know, not everybody's playing the same schedule? I'll ask Rob Mullins all of those things coming up as part of his interview. Why don't you leave it right here?
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.